I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to the Irish Farmers Journal podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Thursday, the 21st of October, 2021. I'm Stephen Robb, and you're very welcome along to the Tillage Podcast. As always, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleagues, Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh, and together we line out as the Irish Farmers Journal Tillage team. So it has been another busy week in Ireland's tillage fields for the most part. I'm looking at the Farmers Journal Sengcrop weather station network around the country, strategically located in most of the key tillage regions in the country. Looking at rainfall for the past 7 days, some areas have managed to escape it entirely. However, most areas are seeing anything between 10 and 40 millimetres. Depending on what part of the country you're in, it's either stopped progress or has done very little to stop you in your tracks. I suppose the standout thing about this week is temperatures. Temperatures hitting 20 degrees plus in places on Monday, which is absolutely crazy for this time of year. And of course, that has ramifications for soil temperatures, which affects everything that you're doing in your fields this week. So as usual, we're going to take a whip around the room here and have a talk to the team to see what they're seeing out and about over the past 7 days. So Andy, to yourself first, what have you been seeing?
Stephen, mainly what we're seeing is stubbles turning into sown fields, and a lot of the work would appear to be done. I wouldn't like to say it's all done, but certainly people have been very active, and the work that is done in good conditions, and that's terrific for everybody. I think a lot of people, except for maybe the guys with a lot of spuds, are probably into the last 20% of what they have to do or what they intend to do. And who knows, if the weather was to kind of dry up and turn kind again, they might even push that out further and sow more in the autumn than is planned, given where the conditions are currently.
Siobhan, what about yourself? What are you seeing?
Yeah, plenty of activity around the fields. Still, I suppose, lots of crops in. I'm noticing a lot of activity with sprayers around, which, you know, is good that people are getting out with early herbicides, either pre-emerge or early post-emergence. So that's good from a grass weed control point of view. Still, people harvesting maize around here, probably getting to some of the last of it. And isn't it brilliant to get maize done in such good conditions? There's no pulling of harvesters out of fields or anything, and bits of beet being pulled in an odd spot as well.
Yeah, I can definitely back that one up as well. Seeing little bits of beet being pulled here and there, just early to get guys going. But I'm hearing good yields so far. Look, 26-27 ton plus, which isn't bad considering that beet is still bulking at this time of the year. I was on the road last week and into the weekend around Northern Ireland, and I seen a lot of sowing done. In fact, anyone I've spoken to was pretty much finished at this stage, with the exception, as Andy said, of the guys who are getting potatoes out. On a potato harvest, things are coming to an end for a lot of guys now. And like you said, Siobhan, isn't it great to see potatoes coming out in such good conditions? In many areas, a little bit more challenging in the north. So I suppose, Andy, getting into it, just in management this week, you have a few comments on sowing, because sowing is still going on in places. So I suppose traditionally, as soil temperatures decrease, and as we get a little bit closer to the November, December months, we increase seed rates. But what I'm wondering is, will the soil temperatures at the moment, them being higher than average, have any impact on that?
Stephen, they certainly will. Like every day when I look at the soil temperatures on the mid stations around the country, you're kind of gobsmacked to see temperature levels of 14 degrees and 15 degrees for the majority of stations in the country, or something in between, with very few under 14. Like, that's phenomenal temperature for the time of year. And, you know, we're seeing that in terms of growth in the fields and particularly speed of establishment. And there are pluses. But I think we got to also remember that warmer soil heats up slugs and makes them go faster and eat more and grow faster and any other pest as well. So that's a potential negative that goes with it. And some people are reporting much earlier than usual problems with slugs. And that's the major driver for it. They're warmer, so they're moving faster and eating more. So like, there is a need, whether we like it or not, even though conditions are good, there is a need to kind of cater for the fact that establishment is likely to be lower from here on in. I speak to some farmers around the country that are being plagued with crows. And while they may not be coming in directly to take seeds, they end up a casualty of the feeding process. And therefore, you will lose a proportion. You'll certainly be kind of looking at 90% kind of top end establishment here, probably moving towards 85 as the ground is getting damper and you're able to get less seeds cleanly into the ground, buried and covered. So, you know, it just makes sense to add a little more seed from here on in. If there's planting still to be done, or where there's planting still to be done.
Yeah, I mean, that's a comment I'm getting back quite a bit as well, just on slug damage in particular. I suppose, what is the threshold as such for taking action on slugs? You know, you have your slate or your plate or whatever, you put it out in the field overnight, a little bit of meal underneath it, and you pick it up in the morning and you see 2-3 slugs. You know, is that enough to justify going out with slug pellets?
In my book, it is, Stephen. If you have a number of traps out there, then I think that is indicating that you have a fair bit of activity going on. You got to remember a lot of the time that you'll pick up big slugs easily enough under the traps, but they're not the fellas that you're actually trying to find. What you're actually looking for is the smaller guys, the juveniles, the young guys. They're the guys that have to become ferocious feeders over the next 5 months. And it's what's going on with those guys that matters most. And they won't be as easy to see as the big fellas. Having the big fellas there, of course, means that they can still lay eggs when conditions are right. So they can still multiply numbers when conditions are right. And it's soil temperature more than air temperature that will drive the maturity and the hatching of those eggs into young slugs. I think that when I see any kind of activity of any significance at all, I'm inclined to put out pellets. And if you're putting out traps, put out traps the day you sow, not a week or 10 days later. Because if you put them out the day you sow and you get a couple of slugs under all those traps a few days later, that's the best time to get pellets out if you're going to use them at all. Knock the numbers down before the crop comes up. Because once the crop comes up, you know they're there because they've taken out plants and seeds and the damage is already done. So you get less value from the pellets by waiting any longer than is necessary. The last comment I would make on that, Stephen, is I still wouldn't advocate putting out pellets just on a prophylactic basis unless you know there's good reason to need them and use them.
Yeah, I mean, it's common sense at this stage. It's IPM. It's what we know. It's what we've been hearing about for the past few years. And basically, it's just good management. So it is. I suppose, Andy, has this been one of the best back ends for getting pre-emerges done in a timely manner?
It's one of them, Stephen. But probably it's fair to say it's the first really good back end we've had where we're depending on pre-emerge sprays. In the past, we had much more option to apply post-emerge, and therefore the pressure wasn't there to get them on pre-emerge. But you know, it's almost as if you couldn't really dial it up any better. an occasional break from planting here and there to get the sprayers out and get the work done. It's been terrific. And hopefully for anybody that has been rolled and had good seed beds in place, hopefully those herbicides will give really good weed control with minimal requirement for any follow-up.
Okay, and we have a spread in this week's Farmers Journal on the tillage pages about weed control.
We've gone in, look at every field is different in terms of what the optimum herbicide choice or mix is for that field. So it's very, very difficult. Indeed, it's impossible to make bland recommendations about what people should do. But, you know, what we've done is we've covered the major herbicides that are in the market, covered the basics of the principles of good weed control, and given you the weeds that are well or poorly controlled by individual products, so that if you know what you have, you hopefully can choose better. But in doing that, we're conscious that an amount of work is already done, but there will still be more to do.
Okay, and that's on page 44 and 45 in this week's Irish Farmers Journal newspaper. So moving on, moving away from tillage for just a moment, but we will return. Siobhan, our editor, Justin McCarthy, had Jason Clay, VP of the World Wildlife Fund, around the editor's table this week. The webinar is available to watch back online. What did Jason have to say for himself?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy, Stephen. I suppose he's someone who's really enthusiastic about biodiversity and wildlife and all this kind of thing. But in a week where the carbon budgets came out, so we heard earlier at the weekend, Justin had it at the weekend on Saturday, that the agriculture is going to have to cut its emissions by 21 to 30%. And look, that's going to be a big challenge to meet those targets. But I mean, Jason Clay was extremely positive about how this can be done in harmony with the environment, I suppose. And one thing I took from it was his he spoke about anaerobic digestion quite a lot, and he spoke about diversifying income streams, and so that includes, you know, carbon, the trading of carbon. He spoke about the trading of habitats and biodiversity, like nature capital. He said, you know, in order to be resilient and to make up for losses, maybe we need to diversify that income stream. And so when grain price goes down, maybe the carbon might prop up the income down the line when we're able to do these things. But the anaerobic digestion, I suppose, is something that can happen if it's allowed here in Ireland. And I suppose Ireland has been behind on this, and you know that more than me, Stephen. Like, We've talked about it a few times on the podcast now. Like, fertilizer prices are high now. We have a huge amount of dairy cows in Ireland, and you know, Jason Clay said dairy cows are the manure from dairy cows is one of the best things that can go into a digester, and one of the best things that you can mix in a digester. And there's loads of opportunities there to reduce our amount of artificial fertilizer that we're using and control some of the methane that's being caused by that slurry. So you might expand on it a bit, Stephen. I mean, he was really positive on it.
Yeah, I watched the webinar as well, and I have to say it was really refreshing and a little bit unexpected, if I'm being perfectly honest. Some of the messages which Jason was advocating for, real practical common sense approaches towards decarbonisation, but I suppose also benefiting the wider economy and bioeconomy, and of course biodiversity. And he was really strong in AD, which was nice to hear. As you say, look, we have a lot of slurry in this country, and slurry is a great medium, so it is, for an AD process. You know, it's just got all the right bugs, and it's also quite liquid. I suppose he pointed out that slurry alone isn't enough, really, so it's not to make an AD plant work. But you know, it's, if you like, the slurry is the whole as such, and it's what you add into it. I suppose that's where the real economic, you know, value comes out of it as such, from an AD operator's point of view. But certainly it was well worth watching back, so it was, on his views towards, I suppose, Ireland in particular, and just in its natural advantages. You did mention one thing that just caught my interest there, around biodiversity or natural habitats. Is he implying that could be monetized and traded to some degree, or
Yeah, so he said like there's financial institutions that are looking into this at the minute, and he mentioned Rabobank, and he said a funny line. He said, coming to a bank near you. So he said, look, this might be 10 to 15 years away until it's up and running properly for every farmer. But basically, you know, these big companies and big institutions are going to pay for natural capital like they're going to pay for carbon. So it's another income stream that we can look out for.
Okay, that's the first I would have heard of that now, whenever Jason mentioned it. So yeah, look, hopefully we'll be seeing these alternative income streams become practical from a farmer's point of view as we move on. So we'll just move on here now. Andy, back to yourself. I suppose this is the week where Northern Irish grain growers received their first protein aid payments under a similar protein aid scheme that we had here in Ireland. And just hot off the press in the past hour or two, we have an announcement from Minister McConnellogue that the funding for the protein aid scheme here in the south is increased for the next 5 years.
Yes, indeed. The press release from the department stated 35 million devoted to the protein aid scheme over the next 5 years, which equates to 7 million a year. Now, there's no details of it, but my guess on that 7 million would be that we would see an increase in both the area that is to be aided and the payment rate per hectare. And again, it'll be a guess as for now, but I know that these numbers were talked about, and I think I'm guessing it will equate to a target of about 20,000 hectares rather than the current 12 to receive payment, and a payment rate that would increase from 250 euro a hectare to 350 euro a hectare to try and keep people in the crop year on year.
So the whole idea of increasing the funding though really is to try and get more people to grow protein crops.
Yes, absolutely. Look, we are heavily dependent on imported protein to supplement our grass and our grain. And that's really what it is, because we still supply a lot of native protein. But of what we are supplementing, the bulk of it's imported. And they're trying to get the story, a better story, to be able to say that we have more native. And you know, I don't know if we'll ever get to the point of having all native protein. Who knows? There's lots of people working in research areas there. But for the moment, the objective is to grow more of our own. And we're thinking that the base of crops will probably be increased as well. As I said, there's no major details. I'm guessing that whatever crop options are there will still probably involve rotational type farming rather than monoculture options. We think also that there may be some crops that will come in or could come in that would be more appropriate to human use rather than animal feed. Things like lentils, that type of stuff, may very well come in there as a bona fide option if we can grow them successfully.
Okay, but I guess, you know, this isn't just about protein as such. I mean, if we're looking at impending climate targets of you know, reducing agricultural emissions by 21 to 30% or so by 2030. I mean, surely this is part of the strategy to maybe increase leguminous crops, to hopefully reduce chemical fertilizer usage, or possibly even increase the area of tillage overall.
Unquestionably, you know, use of nitrogen fertilizer per se is seen as one of the negatives in the whole climate debate. And it's not that it won't be needed or that it won't be responsive, but every acre we can take out of a crop use that does not require nitrogen to be applied is a plus in the overall scheme of things. So yes, it's plus in that regard, but we still have to be careful when we grow leguminous crops that we have a good plan in place, that we won't end up increasing nitrogen losses from the soil as a consequence. But I think, in fairness, we know reasonably well how to address that now. It's just that we have to go and do it.
Okay. Siobhan, just was you brought up the news of the climate targets earlier on in the podcast. Just do we know anything more about these targets? It's part of potentially a larger reduction target of 51% in terms of national emissions by 2030, which is phenomenal. So does it's questionable if that's even realistic or achievable. Do we have any idea when there's going to be more details on the specific agricultural measures or caps or limits that are coming down the line?
It's all kind of very unclear, Stephen, at the minute. I suppose I don't think we even really have it officially that it's the 21 to, like, we don't know whether it's 21 or 30% of a target. So I think by the end of the month things should be clear, and when the climate action plan is announced as well, towards the end of the month things should become clearer. But I mean, there's a big difference between 21 and 30%, and it's a huge target to meet, and I suppose tillage has a massive role to play in that if it's allowed. You know, we're always hearing about livestock numbers, and you know, positively yesterday Jason Clay said we need to stop focus on the numbers. It's not the animals, it's not the number of animals, it's the amount of emissions, and we need to become more efficient. So you know, it can't be a black and white debate where you talk about animal, no, whether we're going to cut animal numbers or not. If we have more tillage in Ireland, we have a lower carbon footprint. Like, tillage has, just on rough estimates, so it's tillage, grain crop produces 1.18 tonnes per hectare of CO2 equivalents. That's four times lower than a beef farmer and eight times lower than a dairy farmer approximately. So if we have more tillage land in the system, we have lower emissions. And, you know, there's opportunities there for other things that will make our agriculture more sustainable and more resilient. You know, if we talk about Irish rations, or we talk about putting more malt and barley into whiskey and beer production, we're going to, that this is the kind of thing that Jason Clay was talking about yesterday. It's about improving markets and improve and diversifying income streams. So, like, there is an opportunity here for tillage to grow in our challenge to reduce our emissions from agriculture, and I hope that the government include that in some of their planning for this. It's in Ag Climatise, you know, about increasing the area under tillage. Ag Climatise has a target to get protein area to 40,000 hectares, and as Andy said, you know, at the minute that payment is going to allow for 20,000 hectares, but if we want to see a 40,000 hectare target met, we're going to have to increase the tillage area.
Okay, it's something that, as I say, just broke over the weekend, and there is a lot more detail needed, and indeed a lot more detail to come. So no doubt we will be returning to this very soon again. But just, I suppose, looking at the future in terms of increasing efficiency, and efficiency breeds innovation, you know, and Siobhan, you have visited a very innovative new farming enterprise down in Tipperary this week as part of the Sustainability Pages program. Just tell us a little bit more about where you were and what you saw.
Yeah, so I visited Brian O'Reilly on Friday. He's down in Ballycoreen in Tipperary, and Brian was a mushroom farmer, and I suppose if he was going to stay in mushrooms, there was a tight margin and he was going to have to make a lot of investment. So he exited the mushroom industry. And then he had these tunnels sitting on his farm, and he needed to do something with them. And he went to Dubai to see his daughter, and he saw these hydroponics in the supermarkets over there. So he's now has one of his tunnels converted to a hydroponic farm. So it's a vertical farm. He has shelves. I think it's four high, so he's grown plants on four shelves in three rows in the tunnel, in these little modules, and the modules basically contain water, and then he's grown basil at the minute, so he just has N, P and K in the water, and they grow over a period of 31 days, and that basil then is being it's being used by, he has Compass is one of his supporters. They're a big catering, you know, they cater for the likes of Google and that in their staff canteens. And he has other pesto makers are buying the basil as well. So I suppose he's in the middle of converting his second tunnel at the minute. I've some of the costs are in the article this week. But his second tunnel will be mixed greens, and he's looking at growing things like cucumbers and that. But at the minute, if he can turn around a crop in 31 days, it's going to be more profitable for him rather than growing some of the bigger vegetables or fruit. But the whole, like, this whole market, like, a lot of our leafy greens and things like basil are imported. If we were growing basil in Ireland, we'd only be able to grow it for 3 months of the year. So the hydroponic system, he has LED lights in the tunnel. It's grown on water. It's grown in a very small amount of space. And he's replacing products that are being imported. You know, they could be coming 10,000 kilometres to Ireland. So he's providing, he harvests on a Monday. The produce is delivered on a Tuesday, and you know, all it does is goes on to the M8 in Tipperary, and it travels to different places in Ireland. So it's a really local product, and really, really good to see someone converting from mushrooms, which was that, you know, he wasn't making the right amount of money out of the mushrooms, and has now innovated to this.
Yeah.
Siobhan, does he have any thoughts of generating his own electricity?
He actually has a wind turbine on the farm. Now, he did say, like, look, it in some years it provides him with a lot of electricity, and in other years it doesn't. So he's not completely dependent on it. But he's getting as much electricity as he can from that one wind turbine anyway.
Yeah, it's a great model. So it is. It certainly seems, especially if you're using it as an import displacement tool, pretty much, whereby the established market's already there, and you're essentially displacing the imports. It's got a lot of potential. So it has this vertical farming system, and it's entirely organic if it's grown with just water.
Well, it's not organic. So there's N, P, and K in the water. But like, there's no pesticides used. It's you know, the product as well has a longer shelf life. I mean, some of those products that are imported, like spinach, it's one of the most common products for having high maximum residue limits in it. So if we can grow those products here in Ireland, it's not being grown with pesticides. And it has some of this product is just delivered in trays. There's no packaging. And there's no, you know, you don't have to put gas in the bag or whatever to package it. So it's a really sustainable product, and it's fresh, and, you know, a longer shelf life as well, because it's grown in Ireland and isn't traveling across the sea or the ocean.
And we'll move on now, but just last question from a labour point of view, how many labour units per tunnel is he working at the moment?
So at the minute, it's himself and his wife are able to do that. So the big things are the sowing and the harvesting, and his brother then is in the business with him as well, and he does marketing and sales. So with the one tunnel, they're in the process of employing a horticulturalist as they expand. So at the minute, it's low on labour, like.
Well, so potentially one tunnel providing enough income for three jobs. That's impressive. So it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy, back to yourself. It seems that every week we talk about grain markets now, but that's because things are moving so rapidly in either direction, but certainly moving in the right direction again this week.
They're in the right direction if you still own it, Stephen. Not if you're trying to buy, probably. All markets have been very active again over the past week. We're looking at wheat gone up to 275, 276. Actually, it closed last weekend for December wheat. We're looking at December next year now knocking on the door at 240, and that was reflected in some of the price offers that Lambia made today. Oilseed rape is probably gone bananas altogether, is maybe the best way to describe it, because rape prices looked like they're going to pass, or they could pass, at 700 euro a ton today. It's up 10 euro a ton today already.
That's going to be a record price, is it, Andy?
I think both the wheat forward prices and the rape forward prices in my book are record prices. They're driven by supply and demand as a fundamental in the background, but I think the extra vump that's under the market today is probably more driven by difficulties with logistics and transport and freight costs. I'm being told that freight cost has more than doubled for this bulk product that's moving over the last number of weeks. And you know, we're looking today at native prices exceeding probably 270 a ton. One shouldn't predict the future, but it's quite likely that we'd be talking about 275 for that product next week, just with the way things are going at the moment. And I think one of the big challenges would be for anybody just to get a product from anywhere, because it's just so difficult to lock in logistic contracts at this point in time.
So I suppose from our listeners' point of view, from growers' point of view, you know, these if it is logistical issues which are causing these high prices or contributing to these high prices, that's not going to last forever, or at least you'd like to think it's not going to last forever. So in other words, should growers be thinking hard about forward selling?
I think you people must consider forward selling. You know, in the market report in the back this week, I'm reporting on what others are saying about the market for the year ahead. And while at the moment prices are strong for the year ahead, there's Matif at the moment, August looking 565 for August 22. You know, call it 555 more November prices, maybe 540 physical prices. You know, they're worth looking at. 240 there today, probably for, well, no, 230 odd, certainly there today, and up to 240 for native wheat for this time next year. There's people out there in the marketing world, and they say that if things next year are generally good for the harvest, then unless there's problems in South America, we could see both maize and wheat drifting down in the not too distant future towards next harvest. But of course, if La Nina does happen, and if the South American harvests are badly hit yet again, well, then, you know, we're looking at another year of high prices. But there is a limit to where prices can go. Already we're looking at people talking about overall demand coming back. We're hearing of forward contracts that were made by purchases into Egypt being reneged on just because of where the price is going. We're hearing of a lesser importation into China, largely because of where prices are gone. So look, at it's many's the time in the past I've seen a forecast deficit turning into a real surplus by the end of the day, because people chose anything else that they could get their hands on if they could get their hands on it.
Okay, and as always, we'll be keeping an eye out on that one. So Andy, just to finish up, Metairn forecast is in for the week in this week's Farmers Journal. What are they saying? Is there going to be work in the tillage fields over the next 7 days?
I'd best describe the overall forecast as mixed Midland, Stephen. There is certainly a possibility that there will be work done. There's zeros there on the forecast for the different regions. And beside the zeros, there's ones or twos. So if land is dry to begin with and it's been ploughed up, then chances are people will be able to stay working if the ground isn't ploughed ahead of them. Now, having said that, you know, they're looking at a modest amount of rain around the country for Saturday. It could take a few days for that to dry out. Of course, those rainfall amounts tend to be bigger generally in the west. And unfortunately, Stephen, I have no joy at all to offer you in the northwest, with only 1-0 on your chart for tomorrow, and running into 2, 4, 3, 5, 10, and 23 over the following 6 days. But that's by far the worst of any of the areas where we would expect a lot of tillage work to be done still.
So in other words, we'll be enjoying our bank holiday weekend up in the north.
Yeah, it you can enjoy it, but you might not be able to enjoy it in fine weather, while others may have zeros to look forward to. But look, that's forecast. It doesn't mean it's what's going to happen in every individual field, and people with work to do still have to be ready to do it and be prepared to do it. The forecast has a habit of changing as things move on. And in the main this year, it has given less bad weather than was forecast, rather than worse weather than was forecast. I hope I don't live to eat those words, but let's hope that it can continue for another fortnight to a month, and then the work is done.
Okay, absolutely. And there we are going to leave it for the week, because time has once again beaten us. So from Andy, Siobhan and myself, Stephen Robb, thank you all very much for listening. And until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.